Silver Line delays, prayer in school, offshore drilling. It's the inaugural Ask the Governor show with Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe. To ask a question, call 877-336-1035. Now, live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, it's Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
Welcome to Ask the Governor on WTOP Radio, the inaugural edition with Governor Terry McAuliffe. We are so glad to have you with us as the tradition continues here on WTOP with this great program. Thanks for coming on board with us this morning.
Mark, great to be with you. Debbie, great to be with you.
Thanks for coming.
Hope you didn't have a difficult time getting here in the snow this morning.
Well, it was a little bit. We flew in from Richmond early this morning. It was a little bumpy coming in.
Yeah.
I think we're about ready for some springtime.
Oh, yes, indeed. Now, a little more than 6 weeks on the job. We know it's been a whirlwind of activity for you, getting settled, and with the General Assembly session starting. How would you describe these initial weeks in office so far?
Well, from the time I was elected, I said I want to reach out in a bipartisan way. I used the transition time to reach out to every Republican in the General Assembly, meetings and so forth, to build that relationship. I want to work in a bipartisan way to grow and diversify the economy. I did what I said I would do, executive order number one. Within an hour of taking oath of office, I signed a bill that no discrimination based on sexual orientation in the state workplace. I signed executive order number two, a $100 gift ban on myself, my family, and every member of my administration is now limited to a $100 gift ban. And I've been working feverishly on job creation. I've made a bunch of announcements. I'll have another one tomorrow, but trying to build and diversify our economy because of the headwinds we're facing with defense cuts.
A lot of folks want to get to know you a little bit better on a personal level as well.
Yeah.
And we also want to tell our listeners that coming up very shortly, a big announcement from you as well. You're actually going to sign a bill here.
Never been done before.
Never
actually
been done
sign
before.
A bill.
I
have
first.
Two official pens for you and
very,
the whole deal.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that coming up right after traffic and weather. But real quickly, just give us a quick thumbnail, who you are, about your family, how many kids you have, that kind of thing.
Grew up middle-class family, father Jack McAuliffe, World War II captain. My mother, who just passed away about a week ago, we just buried my mother, 92 years old, great spirit, but grew up in a middle-class family. Have lived in Virginia for over 21 years, raising five children, three in college, two, one in eighth grade, one in fifth grade. Been married, just celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary, and I'm excited working with everybody to get things done. I like to get things done. Let's work together in a bipartisan way. Let's stop the partisan bickering. We got work to do. Let's do it together.
All right. We're going to talk more with Governor McAuliffe right after traffic and weather.
New year, new governor. It's Ask the Governor on WTOP with Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe. Now back to your hosts, Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
We are here with the new governor, Terry McAuliffe, who will be taking your phone calls this hour. Phone lines are starting to light up at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can tweet a question to Governor McAuliffe. Use the hashtag AskThe, or you can post to our live blog. You can put your question there. It's underway at WTOP.com. Not only is the tradition of the Ask the broadcast continuing with Virginia governors here on WTOP, this time we're doing something we haven't done before. We've got a first. We're actually going to have a piece of legislation signed by the governor while we're live here on the air right here. Tell us which bill you're about to sign.
I'm about to sign House Bill 975. It was sponsored by Delegate Tom Rust, working with Delegate Mike Futrell and Scott Surville. It eliminates the $64 fee that you have on owning a hybrid vehicle. We want people to buy hybrid vehicles. They're buying them, obviously, more efficient, less emission into the environment. It makes a lot of sense, and unfortunately, that this fee had been on our hybrid vehicles. So when I sign this, that fee will go away beginning July 1st. And if you've paid your registration in advance for several years, we will give you a reimbursement for that. It's the right thing to do. It's the right thing for Virginia. But we want to encourage folks to, you know, do the best they can to protect our environment and be more efficient with their vehicles.
This was part of the omnibus transportation package that was approved last year. Why do you think there was such a backlash to what is a smaller fee for hybrid drivers?
I think what folks want from their elected officials is common sense, practical governing. This made absolutely no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the folks who, and I've owned hybrid vehicles. They're more fuel efficient. Obviously, we have to import less oil from overseas. It's great for our economy. It's great for our national security. It makes all the sense in the world. So why would you penalize the folks who are trying to do the right thing? So it's common sense, and this will go away. We have about 75,000 individuals in Virginia that own a hybrid vehicle. Many of them, and I wanted to do this here today because many of them are in Northern Virginia. Mm-hmm. So many of your listening audience own a hybrid vehicle. So
you think it was a disincentive for purchasing?
I do. I think any time you add a fee on or a tax on to something, it creates a disincentive.
But it did bring in, it would have been estimated to bring in a lot of money to the state. How is that revenue going to be made up, or will it be made up?
Yeah, and we looked at our six-year transportation plan, and obviously it's about close to $55 million. My Secretary of Transportation, Aubrey Lane, and he and I talked about this early on, and we found a way through our budget, obviously, to compensate for it. It's an important message to also send. We want people to be fuel efficient. We want to import less oil from overseas. It just makes common sense, and we in Virginia want to be leaders, and we should not be having these types of legislative items that are a disincentive to be doing the right thing. So, you know, we should not be having a tax that doesn't incentivize people to do the right thing.
All right, so all we need to change this and eliminate that fee is your signature on that page.
And here we go. I'm going to sign with two pens so that you both have a pen.
There we go. Pen number one.
A first here on Ask the Governor.
There you go.
A bill signed on the air.
And it is
signed. It is official. And you even get your Governor Terry McAuliffe pen.
Oh, well, how nice.
There you go.
Thank you, Governor.
The official pen.
How cool is that?
So I'm going to hand this over to my assistant here because they're very nervous that he's going to make sure it gets back to Richmond.
It is rare that a bill leaves the Capitol.
No one's too happy about it. My folks were a little nervous. I promise this will now be put with the executive protecting unit members of the state police who travel with me. They will ensure that this is back. It will be back in Richmond tonight.
We have security.
Excellent. Not good in bad weather either.
Yeah, that's right.
That was a little nervy. All right. Well, so that's great. The hybrid vehicle tax repealed.
Now eliminated in Virginia.
Exactly. Okay.
Right.
At 10:15, we want to talk a little bit about Medicaid expansion.
You bet.
Lots of folks concerned. The House and Senate are sharply divided. You've taken your case to expand Medicaid all across the state.
Yep.
This is a battle that Democrats and Republicans are waging all across the country. Major tax dollars are at stake here. And you made this a centerpiece of your campaign. Yep. Why is it so critical?
Well, first of all, let's say this is as important as legislation as we have in Virginia today. And I want to say, first of all, this is bipartisan in the Senate, in the state Senate in Richmond today. It is Democrats and Republicans who have come together. Three Republicans. We actually have legislation that has been written by a Republican, which I support. So you have the governor and you have a bipartisan coalition. Unfortunately, partisan ideology is preventing what is so important for us to move forward. 400,000 Virginians will get access to quality life-saving care. Now, we just had Price Waterhouse just did an analysis. We will save our state treasury $1 billion over the next 8 years so we can provide coverage. We can save our treasury over $1 billion, which we then can invest in pre-K and other top priorities. But I want all your listeners to understand, wherever you may be on the health care bill, it is now the law of the land. We are paying this money in. There is no choice about that. We have already, as I sit here right now, we have forfeited over $270 million that could have come from the federal government back to Virginia to provide health care. These folks are working. 70% of the folks who would be eligible for this, they're working. They get out of bed every day. They go to work. They can have their health care paid for by our Virginia tax dollars, which has gone to the federal government. Bring it back to us. Provide help for these folks. Give them the care that they deserve. For me, as someone of deep personal faith and someone who's been in business his whole life, it makes sense economically. It is socially, morally the right thing to do. And 27 states are now moving toward taking this Medicaid money. I call closing the coverage gap is what we ought to be doing. But as governor, I get out of bed every day competing against 49 states and 200 nations around the world. But in America right now, 27 states are going to get our money, Virginia taxpayer money, into their states to provide health care for their citizens paid for by us. That's why the Virginia Business Council, the Fairfax Chamber, the Loudoun Chamber, the Prince, all the chambers of commerce have come out in support of closing the coverage gap and bringing this money back to Virginia. We're all together. I have told the House Republicans I am open. I want to work in a bipartisan way. I am open to any idea. But they consistently just say no, no, no. They don't even want to talk about it. You cannot move forward unless you're willing to compromise. The Washington politics has ground to a halt. We should not let that happen in Virginia. I am open to work with anyone. Let's bring this money back, billions of dollars, to provide health care for our citizens.
We will Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
We are here with Governor Terry McAuliffe on Ask the Governor on WTOP. Phone number for you to ask a question of the governor is 877-336-1035. 877-336-1035. You can tweet your question with the hashtag AskThe. You can also post a question to our live blog underway at WTOP.com.
Let's go to the phones right off the bat here. We're going to speak with Nate, who is calling in from Vienna, Virginia. Nate, what's your question for the governor?
Hey, guys. Hey, Governor McAuliffe. Congratulations on your inauguration.
Thank you.
I think you just addressed my question a little bit. But again, on the Medicare coverage gap, how high of a priority is that to your administration? And how important do you think that is to Virginians?
Well, I think it's of critical importance. As I mentioned earlier, Pricewaterhouse just did analysis for the Merck Commission, which was set up to look at the reforms. And I'm all for reforms, but we can use this money to deliver our health care more efficiently and cost effectively. But the report that Pricewaterhouse did said that we would save our budget $1 billion by taking this between now and 2022. So think about this for a second. We can provide coverage paid for by the federal government, but it's our tax dollars coming back to us because we're paying it in. We can save our budget $1 billion, which we can then use for priorities, as I say, pre-K, higher ed, and all the other things, dealing with the issues that we have in Virginia on mental illness issues. This is so important for us, but it's also an economic impact. It's not only about the health and safety and welfare of the citizens of the Commonwealth, but it's an economic driver. I was in a Nova hospital the other day. They are going to forfeit hundreds of millions of dollars. And what the CEO told me in the roundtable was that our research and development budget will be cut. We will not be able to do that in the healthcare field. Now, we want our hospitals and our universities to be doing R&D because we've got to create those jobs of the future. The future jobs in nanotechnology, genome sequencing, all of those important are through research and development at our hospitals and our teaching hospitals at our universities. And so it's going to impact our ability to grow our economy. This is so fundamental. And as I say, up to $20 billion in the next decade will roll through our economy, create up to 30,000 new jobs in the Commonwealth, provide health care. It will be a turbocharger for our economy when we are facing severe defense cuts. We've all seen what has just announced, Secretary Hagel, the head of the Department of Defense. We're the number one recipient of DOD dollars, number one in the nation. So we're going to be impacted. Luckily, we had great news the other day. The George Washington aircraft carrier will not be deactivated.
Mm-hmm.
That could have cost us tens of thousands of jobs. But clearly, 6% cuts to our National Guard, $1 billion cuts to the commissary are all going to have a dramatic impact on the Virginia economy. So how do we replace those cuts? And how do we build a new economy? You do it with healthcare. You do it with all these new 21st century technologies. But it takes research dollars. And by forfeiting this money, we are forfeiting our future.
Now, Governor, the initial years of this plan for Medicaid expansion, you're correct in that Virginia is getting its own tax dollars back that they would otherwise lose. But some years down the road, the 100% funding from the federal government decreases to 90%. Critics say this could be a major budget buster, and they don't have a lot of faith in the federal government to stand up to its promises down the road that they may cut funding more. How do you respond to that?
Sure, and let's walk through that. First of all, the first 3 years, 100% paid for, and then it drops down to 90%. So 90% paid for by the federal government, 10% that we would have to incur in our state budget. The analysis has just come back between now and 2022 because of the efficiencies and the reforms that we can do with this money. We will actually save money, Mark. We net money. So that argument, if you believe the Price Waterhouse, and they've been doing the Commonwealth's books for 17 years and they've never been wrong, they're saying that, no, we're protected on the back end. Not only protected about incurring a huge financial liability, we will save the Commonwealth money. So that argument sort of goes away. The other issue is, well, what if the federal government changes and doesn't fully fund? I have said, and I've told the legislators from the day I was inaugurated, let's write this legislation. If the federal government changes it, we change it. Let's protect ourselves on the back end. I am all for that. So we can, but if you're not willing to sit, as the House of Delegates is refusing to even sit and talk to us, if you're refusing to even talk to us, how can we come to a compromise? This is what I say. People are sick and tired of the partisan gridlock. I am working with the Republicans in the Senate. We've talked constantly. We meet constantly. Mm-hmm. You can't even get to first base and even begin the discussions with the Republicans in the House of Delegates. They say no, no, no. I never go into a negotiation saying no. Let's figure out a way in a bipartisan sense. We are known in Virginia of coming together for the good of the Commonwealth. We need to do this on this piece.
I wonder if you think how much of this is a budget matter, and how much of this, I wonder, is political, the opposition not being able to endorse Obamacare on any level.
You got to figure that's probably some of it. And the point I try to make out, we're past all that argument. If I was sitting here as the new governor of Virginia, elected Democrat, and this was sponsored by Ronald Reagan or George Bush, and you called it whatever you want, I would be up there at the White House saying, thank you. You're allowing me to bring billions of dollars back to my economy to provide health care for these folks. Morally, socially, the right thing to do. But economically, it's the right thing to do as well.
Could it cripple the whole budget process in Virginia and ultimately lead to a government shutdown? That's the big fear here.
Well, not on our side. And I have, as I've said on this radio show, and I've said from day one, I will sit, I will meet with you any time of day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I am open. Come, let's meet. I am doing it with the Republicans in the state Senate. They're willing to sit with us and negotiate. My legislative team is over in the Capitol every single day. My Secretary of Health, Bill Hazel, who, lifelong Republican, I reappointed him. It was the right thing to do. Secretary Hazel has been over to meet with legislators. But if you're not even willing to sit and negotiate, this is what has crippled our federal government. Let's not bring those Washington-style politics to Richmond. We can get this done. It's the right thing to do. But we got to do it in a bipartisan way.
Other states have come to a compromise on this, similar right. to what the state Senate is proposing with a private alternative.
Right.
They don't call it Medicaid expansion.
Right.
But ultimately, it gets more people to have insurance coverage. Right. What kind of response are you getting from the House on this? I know they don't like the Senate plan, at least in the initial vote, but what kind of response are you getting in the dialogue from them about what the Senate is talking about?
Well, Senator Watkins, Republican, who came up with what we call Marketplace Virginia, which has the private option plan, which I've supported. As I say, I'm open to looking at all of it. The House of Delegates, as soon as it came out, just rejected it immediately. Wouldn't even sit and talk with him about it. So, you know, listen, I'm the ultimate optimist. I believe we can get there. We've got to do it in a bipartisan way. This is not about a political party. This is about Virginia being a leader in reforming healthcare and doing it the right way. It's about Virginia providing healthcare for 400,000 Virginians. It's about Virginia becoming a leader in the new technologies with research and development. And this is all tied to bringing these billions of dollars back. As I say, every day we waste, I want every Virginian to listen carefully. Every day that goes by, we forfeit $5.2 million. $5.2 million every day that you are paying the federal government that we could bring back. It's like when you fill up your gas tank, the federal gas tax, 18.4 cents. You're paying it. You don't have a choice on it. It's like us saying, we don't want that money back in Virginia. Let's use that money to build roads in California. It doesn't make sense.
All right, we're going to take a break here, get you caught up in the snow on traffic and weather. Back with more of Ask the Governor after this.
Including a rapid fire with a large number of phone calls that have come in for the governor at 877-336-1035. Keep your questions as concise as possible. We'll move through a lot of those in the next 10 minutes. Stay with us.
103.5 WTOP. New year, new governor. It's Ask the Governor on WTOP with Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe. Now back to your hosts, Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
Here's the phone number to speak to Governor McAuliffe, 877-336-1035, 877-336-1035. You can tweet a question with the hashtag AskThe or post to our live blog underway at WTOP.com.
All right, right to the phones. We're going to talk now to Bob, who is holding from Alexandria. Hi, Bob. What's your question for the governor?
My question is this. I understand the governor is Christian Catholic, and I'd like to know how, in a position like that, how he can embrace homosexuality and lesbianism.
In terms of gay marriage legislation?
Yes.
Okay.
What I've said and what I said during the campaign, I want everybody to be treated equally. In order for me as governor to grow and diversify our economy, we need to make sure that Virginia is open and welcoming to everyone. I have stressed that. I have stressed that with my appointments. I have stressed that with my comments. I stress that with my first executive order. You cannot grow and diversify an economy if we're putting walls up. I want the best. I want the brightest. I want everybody to come to Virginia because I keep going back to this point. We do have headwinds. We are in a very unique position. We have been so benefited by the Department of Defense spending. But the other side of that is when you have the cuts that were just announced by Secretary Hagel the other day, it's going to have a bigger impact on Virginia than any other state in the United States of America. My job, I believe, and I focus on this every day, I spend most of my day on the phone calling around the globe and trying to get folks to move their headquarters and start new technologies, is how do we diversify this economy? Dorothy and I, we want our five children to stay in Virginia. But in order for them to stay here, we got to have those jobs of the future. And it is a global competition for these jobs. And we cannot be saying that we're going to discriminate against anybody. I will not tolerate any discrimination of anybody as governor. And I've said this in my campaign. I have told women. And we had some very bad legislation come out of Virginia. And unfortunately, you know, Virginia became a laughingstock on late-night comedy shows. I have told women, first of all, that I'll be a brick wall. I trust women to make their own decisions about their personal health choices. We have to be open. We have to be welcoming. As governor, my job is to drive the economy. And I tell folks, as it relates to your own religious issues, you can deal with your priests and others on that. My job is to drive this economy and make sure that Virginia is open and welcoming. That's the only way you can build a 21st century economy.
I want to get your opinion on Arizona's governor, Jan Brewer, who is right now in the national spotlight over a bill that would allow businesses to deny services to people based on their religious beliefs. Would you sign or veto that kind of a bill if it came across your desk?
I would veto that immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I go back to my point, and I don't know. The reports are today is that she's probably going to veto it. Mm-hmm. Just what I've read in the newspapers and saw on the television this morning. At the end of the day, they need to be open and welcoming. Super Bowls and conventions and so forth. You just can't be putting walls up in any regard. Folks can move wherever they want. It is tough competition out there for this, what I call the 21st century jobs. We need the professors. We need the 21st century technologists. In order to do that, you got to be welcoming to everyone and let people come to your state. So I assume she'd veto it, but I would veto that. Of course, I would veto that immediately.
Continuing with callers, back to the phones. Carolyn is on the line from the district. Carolyn, what's your question for the governor?
Hi, Governor McAuliffe.
Hello, Carolyn.
I challenge you, rather than being a brick wall for discrimination against women, how about a bridge builder? Right now, SJ-78 sits in the Virginia Assembly. The Virginia Senate passed this. This is the federal equal rights amendment that would guarantee to women and men equal opportunities, rights, and responsibilities as citizens. What will you do as governor to stand up for Virginia servicewomen who are now being integrated to the maximum extent possible, thanks to the Pentagon lifting the ban last year, for women small business owners like myself, who are projected to bring in one-third of all new jobs to our economy, and lastly, for working men and women who are paid caregivers in our workforce that lack public policies that make sense for the 21st century working family.
Governor?
Yeah, and one of my big campaign themes and things I talked about all the time is equal pay for women. There's a huge disparity when women get 78 cents for what a man makes a dollar for. If you work the same job, guess what? You ought to make the same amount of pay. There should not be discrimination on benefits or on pay, and it's something, as Carolyn mentioned, I'm going to work diligently on. I do recognize that women are 50% of the workforce of the United States of America. And I go back to my point. They're not going to come to a state that has discriminatory policies. They want to come to a state that treated equally and fairly. And I want Carolyn to know that this is something I talk about constantly. And more importantly, I make sure that we at the state level and the things that I can do as it relates to women and small businesses, I'm going to do everything I can to promote it and move us to, down the road in the future.
Taking another call for the governor, we're going to go to Woodbridge, Virginia. Samuel's holding. Samuel, hi. What's your question for the governor?
Yes, hi. My question is, what is your position on immigration reform And would you allow non-residents, non-citizens to have a Virginia driver's license?
Yeah, and I've come out very strongly. I'm very disappointed that the Virginia Dream Act has gone down once again in the General Assembly. I hope, Samuel, by the end of my 4 years as governor, that I will be able, as I did here today, is to sign a bill with the Virginia Dream Act. As you know, in Virginia today, we have children who, through no fault of their own, are parents that brought them here, but they're not given the same educational opportunities as other children. To me, that's a sense of fairness. We want everybody to have equal rights, and I will do everything that I possibly can as it relates to those issues to push the General Assembly next year. And Alfonso Lopez, who has been a sponsor, and Tom Rust, who I mentioned earlier, have worked very hard in a bipartisan way to get the DREAM Act passed. Unfortunately, it didn't make it through the House of Delegates. So I'm going to work hard in next year, but I really make a commitment to you, Samuel, that by the time I leave office, we're going to, you know, do what we can to make sure I sign the Virginia Dream Act so that everybody has equal rights to education and other things.
And that would include driver's licenses,
sure,
as well? All right. We are here with Governor McAuliffe until the top of the hour as we continue with your questions on Ask the Governor on WTOP.
It's the inaugural Ask the Governor on WTOP with Virginia's newly elected governor, Terry McAuliffe, and you. Now back to Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
We will get to more questions and your phone calls in just a moment. And we're also going to talk about some transportation issues. But first, Governor McAuliffe, you have an interesting summit that you'll be attending once you leave here today. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's exciting. As soon as I was elected, I reached out to Mayor Gray and to Governor O'Malley. And I said, I know there's been meetings in the past, but let's put a regular format together where the three of us meet three times a year. Today, we're going to have our first meeting. We'll be in Virginia, and then we'll do the district and then Maryland, and we'll rotate it around so we can go to everyone's respective jurisdictions. It's important for the three of us to meet. We have so many issues as it relates to the metro and transportation, the Chesapeake Bay. We'll be making some announcements. So the three of us will be meeting. We're bringing our respective cabinet secretaries up today. So we'll have a great meeting and then have a press availability after it. But listen, we have to act as a region because we're all so interrelated. And as I say, really with transportation issues, and the Chesapeake Bay brings us all together. So it's important that the three of us work constructively together. And when we do work together as a region, boy, there's not a place in the globe that can compete against us if we're all working together and working on common sense proposals.
Will you talk about another bridge crossing? A lot of our listeners want to know.
The answer is yes. This is something that has been important, has been raised to me. I have actually Secretary Aubrey Lane, my Secretary of the Transportation, looking at that. A lot of people talk about another bridge over the Potomac River.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having a study done on that right now because it's important. And I think your listeners should understand that, you know, we're getting close to a difficult situation. We have the American Legion Bridge, which in the next 8-9 years is very critically deficient, and it's going to either have to be replaced or major road work done on that. But we can't wait for 7 or 8 years to address that issue. So I'm looking at that today, and we're looking at all of our transportation projects. I'm looking at 66 outside the Beltway, bringing some relief to the traffic. But we're looking at everything. We're putting everything on the table. For me, I've always said on the transportation projects, number one, it's got to ease congestion. Number two, I'd like to see an economic development component to it. And number three, I'd like to have some local say should be involved in the transportation project. So we're going through all of that. But obviously, that is important. And it's an issue that involves Maryland. And they haven't been probably as excited about it as we have, and this is something I've talked to Governor O'Malley about. But if you can take some of that traffic off of 495 instead of bringing them around the Beltway, who are heading, you know, up north, up into Pennsylvania and New York, and if you can get them off, they would really alleviate traffic. So it's one of the priorities that we're looking at.
Okay.
What more are you hearing beyond the reporting that is happening in this region about the delays of the Silver Line on Metro? It looks like now it's going to be summer at the earliest before we see passengers heading out to the first phase of the Silver Line. What more can you tell us about this, and what can we do to expedite this so that folks are getting on board?
Well, we're all waiting. I'm excited to ride that first rail car. I've been telling the Metro folks for a while that we're excited. As you probably have seen in the newspapers, they have not handed it over from the construction firm to MY yet. It's not been done because of the 12 final items. 7 of those are deficient. So we're not going to take possession of this until They've completed the construction as it pertains to the contract that they signed. So they've got about 90 days to make corrective action on those. If they don't have those done by then severe penalties and fines come into play. So I'm optimistic, and the only thing I can say is that I instructed my Secretary of Transportation is to release these remaining seven items. Just make sure in Virginia that we're doing everything that we possibly can to help facilitate if there's any issues on permitting, whatever it may be in these final items, let's make sure we're helping them. But I'm optimistic by summer, it'll be moving. We're very excited. I've spent a lot of time on the issues as it relates to the Metro. I've spent a lot of time. You saw the news, which we just announced the other day, on a TIFI alone. This is very important because I'm trying to keep the toll rates flat. I don't like to see these gigantic increases that had been projected. And over the course of the next 4 years, it's my hope that we can keep them flat. But we've just, my Secretary of Transportation and myself just met with Secretary Fox, the United States Secretary of Transportation, and told him that we are applying for a TIFI loan. Everything looks great. That is so important. It's a $1.9 billion TIFI loan that will help us keep those toll rates flat. It's the largest TIFI loan done in the history of the country, and we're very excited. And as you know, in July, assuming all of the different requirements are met, in July for the next 3 years, I will take $100 million and apply that towards keeping our tolls low.
And that's all tolls in
this
Virginia?
This is the Dulles Toll Roads is what we're talking about.
That's
the
focus.
You
okay.
bet. But, you know, they were expected to go up, as you know, dramatically.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I can pay down and do what I need to do, $100 million in July and then the following July and after that, as long as, you know, the covenants that we've put on are met. But in addition, this TIFI loan of 1.9 is going to be spectacular to help us do what we need to do.
Couple of questions about hunting, and we're going to get to those in just a moment. Okay. But first, while we're talking about transportation, Gary in Fairfax wrote on our WTOP blog that between the Greenway Toll Road and now the 495 hotlines, his family spends $325 a month in tolls, or they opt to use Route 7, which adds an average of 100-plus minutes to their daily
yeah.
commute.
Yeah, this is a big issue, and this is something when I ran for governor I talked about. But, I mean, I've hit it hard.
Yeah.
As I say, putting $100 million up in July of this year, next year, the year after, going and getting the TIFI loan will help us keep them flat. So it's not just talk. We're actually doing things. We're getting it done for the next 4 years through my entire term as governor. I hope we can keep those flat to help Gary and so many other families who are impacted. I also had to deal with this issue in Hampton Roads region, the Elizabeth River crossing. Nothing I can do about it. It's probably one of the worst deals I've ever seen negotiated. There was a 13.5% return as it related to the company that was going to do the construction there. The tolls were so exorbitant that in Portsmouth, Virginia, it literally was going to cripple their ability to do commerce, quality of life. So we've gone in and we've reduced those tolls. I put about $85 million towards that, but we're doing it. I mean, we get it. We understand it. I support tolls, but they got to be fair and they got to be reasonable, and they cannot affect your ability to grow your businesses and do commerce, and it shouldn't affect quality of life. I mean, I live in Northern Virginia for so many years. We're stuck in traffic 67 hours a year. Mm-hmm. We waste billions of dollars just sitting in traffic. Going to see my kids play a ball game, you know, shouldn't be a 3 or 4 hour adventure. I get it. And we're on it, and we're working to do what we need to do to alleviate that traffic.
New year, new governor. It's Ask the Governor on WTOP with Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe. Now back to your hosts, Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
Final moments with Governor McAuliffe and your phone calls, 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035.
All right, finishing up on transportation with the governor before we get to some hunting questions. Let's go to Dave. He's calling in from Annandale this morning. Dave, what's your question for the governor?
How are you doing this morning?
Morning.
My question is basically on the HOV lanes south on 95.
Yes.
And using them, it looks like they're preparing to turn those into toll lanes all the way to the Beltway. And I can understand toll maybe during the rush hours, but I can't see taking the funds that we paid to turn that road and turn that over to a company who built it to basically make a profit off of it. And I'm concerned about what we're going to be paying as Virginians to ride our roads in and out of Washington.
Okay, Dave. Governor, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. Well, first of all, as it relates to the HOV, we have on 495. They're going to be extended all the way down to Fredericksburg. It should be done by early 2015. But understand, as it relates to the HOV, the contractor took all the risk on that. The Commonwealth of Virginia has no risk on that. It was a very well-structured deal. I commend everybody who worked on that deal. It goes back to Governor Tim Kaine.
So that will not increase payment for motorists at all?
And listen, you have the choice on these HOV lanes whether to get on it or not get on it. And the good news for everybody is they redid all the roads and all the entrance ramps and exit ramps. They all were fixed. And, you know, I travel on 495 all the time. It's better for everybody now, whether you get on it or you don't get on it. But everything has been brought up to speed. They're in very good shape. But the risk of this, the company who took it, if they don't meet the projections, doesn't come back to the Commonwealth. It comes back to the company, which is a deal. And I hope it and I support these, what you call the P3, public-private partnerships. I'm a huge supporter of these. You bring in the private sector to work with you, and I'm, you know, we've already had some, about 19 unsolicited proposals as it relates to expanding 66 outside the Beltway. We ought to look at this. If we can do this, this is how we need to do it going forward. Bring the private sector in, working with us, it saves the Commonwealth a tremendous amount of money and moves us forward. So I support these tremendous.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We are going to talk to Butch. He's calling in from Fairfax this morning. Hi, Butch. What's your question?
I'd like to know if Governor McAuliffe is going to sign the legislation allowing hunting in Virginia on Sunday.
Yeah, I've been very public from day one. I will support the bill. I do support the bill. I will sign the bill. Listen, I'm a hunter. I take my two sons hunting. The issue is for many folks who work 6 days a week, the only day that they can hunt is on Sunday. And so I've said from the beginning that I would sign that legislation, and I'm sure it'll be on my desk very shortly.
All right, that's moving along. Let's go to the phones once again. Let's talk to Linda on line six. Linda is calling in from Wythe County in Virginia. Linda, what's your question?
Yes, the governor speaks about growing businesses and commerce. We have coal. We need coal. The coal industry in Southwest Virginia has been devastated. It's a cost to every Virginian. Senior citizens, we are all having tremendous problems with the electric rates and so on. What does the governor intend to do about getting coal back online for Virginia and America?
Governor?
Sure, and obviously coal is so important, Southwest Virginia. I've spent a lot of time. I've been sitting in coal mines myself, talking to the folks who work in the coal business. We have about 5,100 folks who work directly in the coal business. It's important that we protect these jobs. What I've also said, what has affected greatly, obviously, coal has been natural gas. I mean, the biggest driver in what's changed the dynamic in our energy mix is all the natural gas that we has been discovered in North Dakota and so forth. I mean, for the first time now, we are producing more energy sources than we are importing. It's a whole change of our energy mix. I have always said I'm for all of the above approach. We ought to look at it. I mean, obviously, you need to hedge your energy portfolio and have everything in the mix. What I've tried to say as it relates, and if the natural gas continues the way it is, it's going to be hard on other sources like coal because they can deliver this gas so cheaply. So how do we preserve and protect? And I've talked to the folks, and exports is a tremendous opportunity, and this is something I actually enjoy doing, making calls around the globe to sell Virginia products, and obviously coal is one of those. I've had several meetings in the last week and a half in this regard, and hopefully we'll have some announcements very soon about exports that we can do. But I think it's also important that when we talk about coal, and I worry about the folks, are their children and grandchildren going to be still working in that business 10, 20, 30, 40 years from today? Mm-hmm. I think it's important that we give other opportunities like carbon capture sequestration. There are new technologies in the coal business where we could become a world leader. Virginia Tech is the leader on carbon capture and storage technology. That could be thousands of new jobs that the folks in Southwest Virginia. So I want to continue to invest in our research and development, but let's give everybody opportunities, preserve the jobs we have. But I think it's important, my job is to make sure I'm thinking about where are people going to be working 10, 20, 30 years from today? And that's what the governor has to do. And this is what I think about. Big, bold ideas, working in a bipartisan way for the common good, the Virginia way, to get things done.
Governor, in the time remaining, I want to ask you where things stand with efforts to reform the state's mental health system. Obviously, this has been in the headlines since the tragedy involving State Senator Cree Deeds and his son. What is the latest now on efforts to make changes to the mental health system?
I'll be signing a bill very shortly. It's being worked out, and the differences between the House and Senate versions, there's different amounts of money, but we will significantly increase what we need to do. I need to take a very hard look at this to make sure we're doing everything possible, because obviously the system hasn't worked and we need to fix it. This is another reason why I say we should take this money and close the coverage gap, because within these billions of dollars that we can bring back from Washington back to Virginia are hundreds of millions of dollars to treat those that have mental illness issues. So I go back to where we started this program. This is as important as issue as we've faced, not only for our economy, for the health of our Virginia residents, but as an economic driver, and literally hundreds of millions of dollars that we can bring back from this money, bringing back from Washington that we're paying in, we can put towards doing what we need to do to make sure those who need the care, we can provide for them. And it's going to take money to do it. We've got to put more money for our sheriffs and so forth. But that's why also bringing this money back home is the right thing to do for Virginia. It's the Virginia way.
Governor McAuliffe, it's been great to have you here our inaugural Ask the Governor show with you.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. A whirlwind hour. We certainly have plenty more to talk about, and we look forward to doing so in a month from now when you join us again.
Can't wait. Thank you.
Thanks a lot,
Governor. Thank you, Governor. Take care.
Thank you.